The last time we started with the sorry, I don't know, there's something, be careful. We started and talked with web services, and especially last time with architecture, as well as the transfer, what we use with SOAP. And now we can look at the description of web services and also the registry, where we can deposit basically the description of web services to find it by other third-party users. The web service description language, that's basically an XML format, and the intention is to make it accessible for other users, because if you think of RPC there, you basically think of a monolithic distributed application where everything is prepared beforehand. Here with web services, it's something like they are provided, they are, let's say, set into the world, and other users and customers might check what kind of services are available and then basically try to find it. And an important part of it is also to make sense of it. Therefore, you need some kind of a semantic description of it. And what web services have here, you can think of it, it's a collection of network endpoints and ports, and in that sense you have operations and messages, because web services are message based, and also then you have something like a concrete binding towards the network endpoints, as well as then to concrete message formats. And when we look at the the concrete properties, what web service descriptions basically have, it describes what a service does, and in that sense, these are the operations and arguments. And if you think of it, for example, in the Java world, an operation would be something like a Java method that would be basically the description of the Java method with its arguments. And these are described later, we will see that, by port types. And these here are an abstract description. They have nothing special with respect to what kind of protocol we use, what kind of data format we use, what kind of concrete endpoint we use, what kind of specific transfer protocol we use. Do you use SOAP? Do we use HTTP or whatever? Then here, how a service is accessed, there the data formats. These data formats may be part of the individual messages. They are part of messages, as well as the protocols we use. For example, for transfer, we might be able to use SMTP, or we might use HTTP. And the last thing is also where you have a concrete binding. It's the network address where to find basically the service. When we look at the WSDL information model, then we have the following elements, and the first parts of it. That's basically here the an abstract part, and the last thing, that's something like a concrete part. And the abstract part, certainly what you have is here types. That's for non-built-in data type definitions. And certainly you have the generic, the built-in types like Boolean, like int, like character, these type of things. And but here you can define new data types that may be structures or arrays, which might be used by the operations. The next thing is, in order to interact with a web service, that happens with messages. And an individual message, it's unidirectional. Therefore, in that sense, messages are really sent from one sender to a receiver. And if you want to model something like request-response interaction, then you need something like, you need two messages basically going to the web service and going from the web service back to the original invoker. And then you get the request-response interaction. And you have to bundle these two messages together. The other thing is a message, what I hear, can consist of can consists of multiple logical parts, and that's something similar as regular messages where you have multiple MIME types in it. And when you have a message for associated with a Java service, then basically one logical part refers to an argument of an invocation. And therefore, if you have multiple arguments for an invocation at the web service for the operation, then you have multiple logical parts. It's not really when you have a method call, the name of the message is not necessarily the name of the method. You can do the binding with it. What you usually actually do is you use something like the name of the method and then add the term request, and then on the answer you add the term response to model the response message. But it's not like in an RMI where you basically say, well, the method call, the RMI method call is basically the name of the method. Therefore, in that sense, that's not really required to do the constraint. The other thing is then the port type. That's the set of operations supported by one or more endpoints. And each operation, you use then here these input-output messages if you have these request-response interaction. If you think again of Java, then port types is basically something like a Java interface. Also here, yeah, I have a problem here because it's so type. I can say, yeah, corresponds to a Java interface. And if you look at the operation, that corresponds to like a Java method. And therefore, if if your Java interface provides multiple methods, then for each method you have an individual operation, and that you can bundle together into the port type. The port types also offer the possibility of different message patterns, and the message patterns can be something like one-way request response. If you have a request response, then you have a bundling of two messages. You can have something like solicit response in the sense of the server sends a message and expects an answer, or notification. The server sends a notification to a client, which basically subscribed to that notification. The next part of it to come, and this is also more or less an abstract definition. Binding, now you can bind port type and its operation to an individual implementation of it. And that means to a concrete transfer protocol. And a concrete transfer protocol could be something like SOAP, could be something like what CORBA provides, and so on. And it's quite common that, for example, you have a single port type and you have multiple bindings, especially if your service supports different interaction protocols and transfer protocols. And usually you would define the port type once, but then the binding, you would have multiple bindings in the WSDL file. And if a client downloads the WSDL file, it can decide what kind of protocol it wants to use, because, for example, it might not support CORBA, but only SOAP, and then it would use SOAP as an interaction with web service. And the last two thing is here, a single endpoint, that's the port, and where the combination then with binding a network address. And port here, it's a term port, but it does not mean it's a TCP port. I mean, we talk about the port in the context of a WSDL file. And you can have as a service a collection of endpoints. And if we look in more detail to Intuit, as I mentioned before, we have here the abstract part and the concrete part. Abstract part types messages and the port types, which describe especially what the service provides. And part of the port types are the operations. And then we have the how and the where to find it, and how the transfer and the interaction takes place. And I already mentioned you can have multiple bindings for the same port types. And later we will hear about bad practices when you have for each binding a separate port type. And usually you should not really do that. You should have, when you have an abstract definition of a port type, you can map it to multiple or to different bindings. And when we look at the relationships here again, it's something like we start out with the data type definitions like arrays and structures and message definitions, and then we can bundle them together, that we say we have a request response which model an operation, and we can put that together And later on we will see an example description of a WSDL file. We can have multiple operations. It's something similar like multiple methods of a Java class or a Java interface, put that together in the port type, and then we come to the concrete things. We do the binding towards the port and the network address. And the server bindings basically connect port types to a specific port, and thus define here associating the physical interaction with the abstract description of it. And we can say that the definitions we use here, they are something similar like, similar to IDL. If you remember the interface definition language, what we have with RPC or also with CORBA, where you can also have new data types, and that's pretty similar what you have here. But in that sense, you use XML to describe it. In the other way, if you remember with RPC, then we used basically something similar like C to describe new data types which can be transferred between the involving entities. Good. The example, we can let's look at an example of it here with soap-based, when we have a soap-based binding. The intention, what we have here is we have a service which provides only a single operation. Well, you already see that for a single operation, it's a WSDL file is already quite verbose, and therefore, in that sense, it's not really always very easy to basically go through. It's completely defined in XML. Therefore, you could actually use just a regular XML browser or a web browser which understands the XML language here, the WSDL language. Then you can really nicely present it in your browser. What it does, single operation, we provide a ticker symbol, and then we get the current stock price. What we have here is, at the beginning, we have here all the namespaces. That's the namespaces we use. And if you look at it, we have some generic namespaces from WSDL, and then we have our application-specific namespaces here with stock quote, which have application-specific definitions. We have the next thing is when we continue down, we have here the data types. That's basically the data types here, that section here. And we have here an element name, trade, price, request. We have the element, the complex element ticker symbol, and that's basically a parameter for what we use for the request. That's a data type for the request. And it's basically from, it uses the string. And therefore, in that sense, we use the data type ticker symbol. We use the data type price, which is then used for response, for the response message. And when we see here the one message, the message get lost trade price input, that's a message. And that uses here this element as a parameter. That's the parameter of it. And the parameter has the data type. It uses here ticker symbol, and that ticker symbol is of data type string. And therefore, in that sense, you have the hierarchy here, trade price request, that consists of just a single element, ticker symbol, and that the data type string. But then we could have a multiple elements here, like ticker symbol and so on. And you can bundle them. Similar thing is here, when you think of it, for the response, that's the response message, and that's again here the parameter, which then transfers here the value for a price. And now you can have the operation. And the operation here is get last trade by price. That's basically a combination or a sequence of two messages. Here, that's the input message, and that's the output message. The input message is this. The output message is this. And you could even have things like to handle input-output parameters. If you have input-output parameters, that means that the parameter first appears here, and then it would again appear here. And therefore, it makes it rather easy to handle here input-output parameters. You just list them in the part here as well as in the part here. The other thing is here, this is still all on the abstract part of it. And now we come to the binding here. And we have here the port type. That's this here, the port type name, the stock quote port type. And we have the binding name. And in our case, we bind it here to SOAP. And in that sense here, we have here again the transport protocol. And that's here HTTP in combination with SOAP. Then we have here the operation name. That's here get last trade price. We have the SOAP action. That's from the service what we want to provide, and then we basically use for the body and literal in a sense when you have HTTP, you know, with text HTML and so on, that you use here the definition of what kind of body you use. It's just a literal for input-output. And here at the end, you have then here the endpoint. And let's move just a little bit up. That's the name of the service. And here, that's here the endpoint. And the endpoint is here the address, stock quote, where you find the service. Here you define basically the what kind of script is executed, or what kind of operation is defined, and then here you have the service, and basically you map here the binding to this stock quote, the port name. And that's basically the name of the service. And that means here, that's the network network address. And later, I'll give you an URL with X methods, where you have a whole bunch of web services listed. The point is here, this is a very simple WSDL file. It's a very simple one. And you already see that it's rather verbose, and it's rather easy if you write that by hand, even if you use an XML editor. It's very easy to have a mismatch in it, that you name a message or an operation, you use the wrong name in the binding, or you forget things in order to put messages together, and therefore it's rather easy to make mistakes. And therefore what you have here is you have the possibility to generate the WSDL file as well as to generate code from with a WSDL file. And therefore, in that sense, you have a two-way of generating things. The one of the points is here, you have your write here, your application object, like your Java interface, and you do the implementation of it. And what you can do of it is now to use that and use the WSDL generator, and that basically generates your the WSDL file for the service. And also, certainly with a generation, you can, in a generation process, you can provide what kind of protocols you want to support and so on. I mean, that's usually, you can't generate out of a Java interface. That's not part of it. But certainly in a generating process, then you have to specify additionally what kind of protocols, transport protocols you want to use. But then you can generate your WSDL file. When you have your WSDL file, you can actually now use it to with your WSDL compiler, and now you can generate your skeletons, what you can use for the interaction on the server side. Similar what you had with RMI. With RMI, when we did the generating process for the registry, we had these two things. We generated the proxies, in that sense the stubs, as well as the skeletons which are used on the server side. And here you have the WSDL file generating your skeletons in the server side. You can use it, the WSDL compiler for the client side, generating our stubs. And now we can use here stubs and skeletons for the interaction on a SOAP-based middleware. And then we have here the two interactions between client and service. And certainly you can download here the WSDL file after a request, and then integrate the stubs into your application. And it's not really necessary to do that beforehand, but you can do that here dynamically and run the WSDL compiler and generate the stubs of it. And that makes then, on one hand, writing the WSDL files easier, because it's derived from the application component, application objects, and also it makes it easier to have then the stubs and skeletons. The The last things common bad practices, sometime in 2011 to around or 2010, basically there was a research project which tried to look at a very large number of WSDL files, and something in the order of around 400. And the point is, how do you use WSDL files? WSDL files are used in twofold. Once is during development time. And as an application developer, you want to look at description of WSDL files, what kind of services are available. And in that sense, you decide as an application developer, well, what is available, what can I already use, and it's publicly available as a service for free, and which I wanted to integrate into my application and avoid programming it myself. The other thing is, it's used dynamically at runtime when the application interacts with a registry and tries to find the service and downloads the WSDL file and then extracts like the endpoint information and also possibly to generate the stubs. And especially if you look at the first part of it, like the application developer wants to look at it. Therefore, it needs some kind of a semantic description what the service actually does. And therefore, in that sense, you have here, for example, you want to look at like the names of the operations, the name of things, port types which are provided. And often the service developers do not really have sufficient care of names and comments. And often names relate to their roles. So here, often names relate to role. What do I mean? Like body, parameter. Like an argument of an operation, it's called parameter 1, parameter 2, parameter 3. Well, you have no idea what it is. You only know it's parameter 1, parameter 2. Therefore, in that sense, semantic information is completely missing, which makes it very difficult for an application developer then to look at it and say, well, that's exactly what I wanna use. The other thing is, port types are tied to concrete protocols. I already mentioned you can have a single port type and then map it to multiple concrete bindings, depending what kind of, if you want to use CORBA, if you want to use SOAP, or if you want to use SMTP and so on. And very often people have a port type for SOAP, then they write in the same port type for CORBA, they write in the same port type for SMTP. Therefore, you have multiple port types. You don't need that. You have it's sufficient for a single port type. The other thing is, semantically unrelated operations are placed in a single port type. It's they looked at, for example, at Amazon, the Elastic Computing Cloud. They put in a single service 70 operations. And the operations do security, they do snapshots, they do volume. I mean, they do everything. And therefore, in that sense, it makes it very difficult and say the intention is a single port type should be handle things which belong together and not do everything. And the last thing is what was very oftenly done, overload output messages. They can handle results, and in the same way, they also handle error information. It should be separated, and therefore, it really depends what kind of answer you get. Sometimes you have to interpret it as a result. Sometimes you have to interpret it as an error, depending what kind of state you have. And this makes it then very difficult for a third party to understand it. And that were more or less some of the common bad practices. And it's legal. It's not things that it's not possible, but people make it then very difficult for third-party application programmers to understand it. The next thing is, if you look at WSDL, it's supposedly to provide information about available services. And you have to use something like a registry to make these services available. And UDDI is a common registry, and you can have definitions basically for you have services provided by businesses, organizations, other providers. You can define what kind of services available, the technical interface which is available, and the point is here, UDDI itself is a web services. Therefore, you use WSDL service to interact basically with UDDI. Therefore, in that sense, you have something similar like a bootstrap. And it's very similar, as you remember, with RMI, remote method invocation, the RMI registry itself used RMI methods to invoke the functionality of the registry. Therefore, in that sense, you'd use the same type of approach again here with UDDI. And here it's open, it's managed now by OASIS. I mean, here the OASIS manages UDDI. And when you look at it, the business registry information, you have three types of interactions. White pages, certainly you can know it from telephone books. You have the name of the company name or the business which provides the service, and you can look at the business and look what kind of services they provide, like you look on a Microsoft and check what kind of service are available from Microsoft. You can look at yellow pages. In that sense, you look at what kind of category of services are provided. And green pages has nothing to do with green computing or things like that. It's basically you have something like information about a given web service and like a pointer of a web page, of a web service description file, and you try to use that as a link to go to the registry and say, well, where and how do I find it? And it has nothing to do with green computing. I mean, I have no idea why they use here green pages. And because I don't really remember in the telephone books in the U.S., I know white and yellow pages. I don't remember. Does anybody know in the U.S. if they have green pages? I don't know. I don't know. Okay. If we look at the entities, that's basically a hierarchical structure. And here, like business entity, like the owner, name, unique key, and then some kind of additional descriptions. And now you have here the business services associated with it. And here you have the business services. They provide, just list them. And then you have here a group of services, and each service you can bundle them. And then here for each service you have then a binding template, and that binding template represents a single web service, and that again has name and templates, and also then goes to the T model, and the T model that basically describes then here the individual WSDL file. And if you look at here the T model, then you have the T model key, and then you have here the UID, and then you have here the name of the T model. Then comes description, which is basically human readable, and it's also intended for an application developer basically to look at it. And then you have something like an overview document, and that overview document has then usually here an overview URL, and that URL that goes then to HTTP, and that provides you the file USDL, WSDL. And then here comes the overview URL, and here then the end of the overview doc. So here, overview doc, and so on. The point is here, usually the WSDL file is usually not stored on a UDDI registry. Therefore, what is here, that's part of the WSDL file, registry of it. And the whole WSDL file is very often stored on the database of the service provider. And therefore, what you get in a registry with a T model, you get a link to the WSDL file provided at the appropriate database of the service provider. And that's here with the T model, basically provides here the link to the WSDL file. And with some additional registries. The last thing, what we can quickly look at it with the registry API that provides you more or less the functions. Service provider can publish services. requesters can look up and other registrars can interact with. And what you have is here, find a service, the publisher can add here or delete services with add, modify, deletes. Then you have a security API to get authentication of the interacting parties. You can transfer ownership. To transfer ownership from one UDDI registry to another registry, therefore ownership of other registry, it's not ownership from providers, it's ownerships of registries. Then as a client, you can have a subscription that you ask what kind of services are available. When new services get provided, you get feedback, and then you can also replicate it. And I think that's what we can stop here, and tomorrow we can continue on with. And one last thing is, if you go onto the link, which is in the script, on X methods, there's a whole bunch of WSDL descriptions, and you can download then the web services and use it speed for weather forecast or whatever. There's the all public domain. You can use it and interact with them. And there are all the WSDL files available. Thank you very much.